Chapter 38. No mistake. The wolves were behind her. That she didn't need to see them to know what they were freaked her out even more. She didn't know how many might be there, but their scent was indescribable, not like dog at all. Some primitive part of her brain set off a complete total body alarm that dried her mouth and made her muscles seize. Her heart was a fist pounding the wall of her chest. The puppy sensed them now, too. She felt it go rigid, and then the puppy was hunkering down and shivering all over, trying to make itself very, very small. She kept her left hand under the puppy, but let her right drift to her hip. Her fingers curled around the butt of her father's Glock. Then she pivoted, slowly, carefully, to face them. There were three. She didn't know anything about wolves, other than what every hiker knew. You didn't want to run into them, despite the fact that wolves were supposed to be as freaked out by people as people were by them. She'd heard wolves off and on throughout her time in the Waccamaw. Back when things were normal, their plaintive cries were eerily soothing. Of course, that was then, and this was the end of the world. These wolves were big and charcoal gray, like something out of National Geographic, and clustered on a small rise at the edge of the woods, perhaps 100 feet away. The alpha male, she knew it by its smell, which was more acrid and quite strong, was very tall, with rangy legs, a broad chest, and golden-yellow eyes, alien eyes for an alien world. It wouldn't have surprised her at all if that rogue moon had risen. A stationary target at this distance was no problem, but wolves were very fast. She could never outrun them, and if they charged, she would probably empty her magazine and not hit one. She left the Glock in its holster. Instead, she held her right hand palm out, hoping that the wolves would know empty when they saw it. Locking eyes with any animal was a very bad idea, but the alpha male's gold eyes grabbed hers, and she couldn't look away. The wolves stared. She remembered to breathe. The alpha male moved first. It settled onto its haunches, and then sank to its belly like a dog settling down for a nap, and began to pant. The sense she got was that the wolf was not necessarily comfortable, but it was ready to wait until something changed. As if by silent command, the other two sank down as well. The smallest squirmed on its belly to lick the alpha male's jaw. The alpha's scent, all their scents, had changed, too. Still wolf, but now mingled with something a little less sour. Another one of those weird flashbulb moments flared in her mind. Mina, lying by the fire, pressing against her thigh. This was not exactly the same, but the scent was calmer somehow, like, friend? The tense spring of her guts uncoiled just a smidge. Well, perhaps not friend, so much as no threat. I'm leaving, she said. Maybe she should say something else? She couldn't think of anything else. What did you say to a wolf? She eased back a single step and waited. The alpha male was a sphinx. She took another small sliding step back, felt the heel of her boot butt against the dead woman's leg, and realized she would have to turn around. She didn't want to do that, but she had no choice. All the tiny hairs on her arms and neck spiked with fear, and her skin was so jumpy she thought it might just tear itself from her bones and go screaming down the road. Heart pounding, she turned on her heel and began to walk, not too fast, not too slow. Every jangling nerve told her to bolt like a bunny rabbit, but she thought that would make the wolves chase her, maybe change her smell from no threat to dinner. After 30 feet, she was still alive. The wolves' scent remained unchanged. No one was storming after her, and she decided to chance it. She craned her head over her shoulder for a look back. The wolves were standing now, watching her go, their breaths wreathing them in smoke. After a moment, the smallest wolf turned and glided back into the woods. A second later, the third followed, leaving the alpha alone on the rise. For reasons she didn't understand, she stopped and turned to face him. She was too far away to make out its face, but she felt its eyes. Nothing wordless passed between them, no deeper understanding, no telepathic paranormal stuff. But when the alpha male reared onto its back legs like a playful shepherd before pivoting and melting back into the forest, when that happened, she thought maybe there'd been yet another change in her. Chapter 39. By mid-afternoon, when a sign told her she was 20 miles from Rule, she'd noticed three things. The closer she got to the village, the fewer dead bodies she saw. She had yet to run into anyone who wasn't dead, and she smelled smoke. The smoke was very strange and very familiar, and it made her heart thump a little harder. She'd smelled this kind of smoke before. Only then it had been a phantom, the first sign of the monster in her head. "God, no, not now. Don't let me die here. Please, just a little longer. Get me through to Rule so they can save Tom, and then if I've got to die..." The puppy sneezed, pawed at its nose, then sneezed again. Her relief was like splashing into a pool on a very hot day. If the puppy could smell the smoke, she wasn't hallucinating. This wasn't a symptom, it was real. She got a good snootful, trying to sort out the components. Wood char mixed with a chemical sting, like the fluid her father used to spritz over charcoal briquettes, and something almost sweet and juicy like the pork roast her mother made on Sundays. But there was something sooty and unsettling about the odor, nothing that made her mouth water. Shielding her eyes against the sun's glare, she aimed a squint at the sky. At first, she saw nothing, just an impression of white from the sun burning her retinas, but then she spotted just the faintest wispy tail, a thin dreadlock of very dark smoke. Not leaves, she knew, which burned white or gray, and not wood. A chemical fire? Dropping her gaze to the snow, she eyed the by now familiar scuff of boots and shoes and flip-flops and bare feet, and then spotted deep, straight cuts and the stamp of horses' hooves. Wagons. Interesting. North, up by Oren, was Amish country. With its proximity to the mine, she didn't think Rule was, but maybe even the Amish had decided to come south, or... Of course. They'd come out with wagons to gather up all those bodies. The people in Rule must have decided to establish some kind of perimeter. That made perfect sense. No one would want heaps of rotting corpses piled outside town. But why no people on the road? Where was everyone? Hiding? Waiting until dark? Hoping to avoid those brain-zapped kids? No, that didn't make sense. All her run-ins with those kids had been either in the early morning or at dusk. Come to think of it, she had never seen one in broad daylight. Something Larry said popped into her head. In some ways, she's still kind of a typical teenager, like always waking up just when I'm ready to sleep. Well, that was interesting. Before the monster, when her parents were still alive, she'd been the same way. Staying awake in morning classes was an act of will. Everyone her age was chronically sleep-deprived, downing Red Bulls and Mountain Dews and coffee to stay alert. The monster had taken that away. When she really stopped to think, smelling that phantom smoke hadn't been the first monster sign, but the second. The first sign had been the change in her sleeping patterns, frequent awakenings in the middle of the night, bizarre and fractured dreams, a feeling of restlessness as if she'd drunk two pots of coffee. The monster in her head had made her very different from her friends, maybe very different from other kids her age. Before stealing her sense of smell and eating her memories, it had taken her sleep. And of course, there'd been her parents and that recurring nightmare. A trauma she relived over and over that blasted her sleep. And Tom hadn't slept much either. When he did, he always seemed to pop awake just a few hours later, and he kept that up all night. From bio, she knew most people slipped into REM sleep, dream sleep, a couple hours after falling asleep, and normal people went through 3 or 4 REM cycles every night. Other than that one night, before he'd come close to telling her what weighed on him so much, Tom never slept for long stretches, maybe because he couldn't help it. Maybe Afghanistan had changed Tom and altered his brain somehow. She thought again of post-traumatic stress and nightmares that stormed in technicolor across the black screen of Tom's mind, horrors from the past Tom could not outrun. Horrors, nightmares. That might have saved him. Messed up hormones might not be the only things that had saved her from changing so far. Maybe, as with Tom, altered sleep and nightmares were important, too. More to the point, maybe it was her whole screwed-up brain. Maybe the monster had saved her life. Chapter 40. At dusk, she caught their scent, faded and musty. Most old people smelled like used underwear, and she could tell from the rich clog of odors that there were a lot of them, all bunched together. She was downwind, and she thought they were still fairly distant, but she sensed their exhaustion and the sharp sting of their panic. That made sense. These old people must know that the brain-zapped kids woke up just as it got dark, and they'd want to be off the road and somewhere safe. She could envision the road ahead, a solid whip of humanity stretching from rural for miles. She felt a prick of anxiety. It was one thing to find rural. It was another to try battling her way through a crush of fellow refugees to get help for one person, even if he was young. And how would these old people react to her? Judging from the frowsy reek, there were also dogs, and, she closed her eyes, concentrated, caught the aroma of sunshine and warm hay, horses. Something more, too. She inhaled again, and then her nose twitched with the bite of gun oil and singed metal. Guns. A lot of those, too. When she first picked up the puppy, she'd taken the Glock from its holster and slipped it into the right-hand pocket of her jacket. She debated simply taking out the weapon, more as a deterrent than because she wanted to pick a fight, then thought better of it. If someone started shooting, it would be over fast, and there was only one of her, so she left the gun where it was. On her right, a small green sign flashed out of the darkness. Rule 6. Beyond, there was another billboard for the hospice, and a sign urging visitors to stop in at Harvest Church, trust in the healing hand of God. A few more hours, Tom, she thought. Hang on, just a few more. 2 hours later, she heard them, a muted, confused gabble. Then she spotted the yellow bob of flashlights and silver-edged silhouettes. Not a throng, but easily several hundred bathed in the sickly green light of that surreal moon. She smelled them much better now. A great stinking ball of old men and women at the end of their tethers, and not a few dogs. People and animals were streaming and bunching around her, but either they hadn't noticed her in the dark or didn't care. The puppy was awake, too, and she could feel it begin to shiver with fear. It's okay, she murmured, hugging it close, praying that it wouldn't start to bark. The last thing she needed was attention. She'd already done up her hair in a long braid and shoved it beneath her watch cap, but she still felt exposed. One good look at her face, and these oldsters would know she was a teenager. She jammed on a John Deere ball cap she'd found on the road, pulling the bill as far down as she could. She turned up the collar on her coat, too, hoping that would mask her silhouette. No one was moving forward, that was the thing. Instead, the crowd milled uncertainly before a huge 18-wheeler lying on its side like a beached orca. The forest hugged the road on either side, but no one made a move toward the woods to go around the roadblock, and then she saw why. Among the trees, ranging on either side of the overturned semi and perched on top of the truck, were other people, and many, many dogs. She heard a hollow clop coming from behind the trailer, the jingle of traces, and knew she'd been right about horses. Far ahead, one of the men at the roadblock was shouting into an old-fashioned bullhorn, "We will get to everyone. We know you're tired, but you'll just have to wait your turn. You'll be safe here. The change don't come this way, so everyone just calm down. The changed. So that's what people were calling them now. How could they be sure those brain-zapped kids wouldn't come? She slowed, hanging back, teetering on the very edge of the crowd, trying to decide what she should do. She was afraid to slip into the woods, and those guys on the truck had rifles, duck and weave through the crowd. Man, that was a big risk. If she bumped anyone, if someone got a good look. Just ahead, a trio, one man and two women, bunched, with a Labrador tagging behind. Its tail drooped, and it smelled of dog and salt, and another smell that made her flash to a bowl of slimy cold oatmeal her aunt tried to make her eat the day after the helicopter exploded. Sad, she thought. The dog's sad. But then the lab's ears pricked. She scented its sudden surprise as the pop of an electrical outlet, a burnt fizz sizzling in the air, and that it was pivoting, straining at the end of its leash, its tail whisking back and forth, and it started to bark at her. Chapter 41 Shut up, she thought. Her knees began to shake, and she felt her legs go rubbery as the dog continued to bark. Shut up, shut up, shut up. Watson! A gangly elderly man in a fur-trimmed parka sounded both exasperated and exhausted. Come on, what are you... He turned, his flashlight scything through the dark, cutting across her body before continuing on. As soon as the light passed, she ducked, tried turning away, but then the torch swept back like the beam of a lighthouse and caught her. She heard him gasp. Oh, Jesus. What? Said one of the women. Alex thought her scent was very sour, the combination of days without washing and annoyance rolling off in a cloying fug. Turning, the woman got a good look at Alex, pinned in the light like a bug to cardboard. Holy shit! She said, and then Alex heard the metallic g-thunk-chunk of a shotgun pump. Wait! Alex said. The puppy was whimpering now. Hugging the dog with one hand, she held up the other, palm out. I'm not one of them. Not yet, you aren't, said the woman. To her left, another much older woman with a beaky nose had drawn an ancient-looking Luger. Or maybe you're just moving up the fucking evolutionary ladder. Please! Alex sidled back a step. I'm just trying to make it to... Not with us, girlie! No way! The older, hawkish woman with the Luger tugged the toggle joint and then let it snap forward. Hold up, Em, the elderly man said. She seems okay. Look, she's got a dog. Let's just take a second here. Look at your dog, Alex said. The lab was still barking, but its tail whisked the air in a frantic semaphore, and now she could hear more dogs beginning to bark. Beyond, heads were turning, flashlights stabbing through the dark. The pool of light around her body widened and got brighter as more and more people shone their torches her way. "Your dog's not afraid." "Because you haven't turned yet," said the woman with the shotgun. "I say we shoot her now." The beaky woman squinted down the Luger's barrel. Her bony hands had tightened to claws. Get it over with! Better yet, hang the little bitch! Wait a minute, the man said. We need her. We have her. They'll let us in. I got no use for one of them, the Luger lady spat. Remember the last one we run across? Went to sleep a little angel, woke up an animal. But the dogs know, don't they? Alex said. The lab, Watson, was straining at its leash, and beyond, Alex could hear other dogs whining and a general murmur rippling down the line as more and more people became aware of her presence. There was the sound of handguns being drawn and the rack of rifle bolts and shotgun pumps. "Isn't that why you have them?" "She's right," the man said. "We didn't have Watson then." "It's just a damn dog," Luger lady said. "What the hell does it know? Did it know that little bitch that got my Cody? I told him to kill her, but she was just a kid, just a sweet little innocent monster killer." "Hell, you don't want her? I'll take her." This from another man dressed in hunter's camouflage. He held what looked like a machine gun, maybe an Uzi, in one hand, and two ammunition belts crisscrossed his chest. He had very white, very square teeth that were too perfect and probably false, but his grin was wide and maniacal and menacing. I'd like to see one of them try to come after me. I'd just dare them to try.
No one's taking me,
Alex said, working to keep her voice steady, but her heart was trying to punch its way from her chest. The puppy had gone silent and was trying to melt into her body. She saw Uzi pushing past the others, and she took a step back, then another.
Please, I just want to—
Hey! Wait a minute!
Another voice, very angry, coming from the crowd. Who says she's yours?
I said she's mine!
Uzi clamped a beefy hand around her left wrist, just as someone else, she couldn't see who, grabbed at her from the right. She felt the puppy clawing at her shirt, and then the dogs began to bark, not snarling or foaming, but in a prancing, jabbering frenzy, and then it seemed that these were not people anymore, but plucking, grasping hands and angry mouths and shattered ancient faces full of desperation and hatred and despair. They weren't really seeing her at all, only what she represented, the cause of the disaster. A symptom and the disease itself. The puppy was crying, trying to squirm its way out of her jacket.
Careful, she pleaded. Please, stop. You're going to hurt him. Stop.
Calm down.
From the front of the crowd and far away, the man with the bullhorn was shouting.
What's the trouble here? Everyone calm down. Just stay calm.
The ripping roar of bullets, a stuttering flash of light split the night.
I'm telling you, back off!
Uzi brandished his weapon.
Just back the fuck!
Another shot, this time from behind, and Uzi jerked, a look of stupid surprise on his face, and then he was falling in a rattling heap.
Get her!
Someone shouted, and then they were running, the crowd boiling around, pushing her back and forth in a tug of war. Hands tore at her clothes, tangled in her hair. Her jacket burst open, and the puppy was suddenly gone in the crush, although she heard it yelping. The man with the bullhorn was shouting, and there were more shots, and then she screamed as fingers stripped off her coat. Someone sang,
"She's got a gun! She's got a gun!"
A chaos of dogs thrashed and twisted on their leashes, the clamor of their barking and yawping redoubling in the general roar, and now the people were shouting,
"Kill her! Get her! Get—"
Quite suddenly, she was airborne, her feet swept away from under her. She screamed again as the night sky and that sinister moon spun in a drunken whirl. They were passing her from hand to hand like a crowd in a gigantic mosh pit. She couldn't see where they were taking her, what they meant to do, but then she was pinned to the ground, staring up as if from the bottom of a very deep well.
Little bitch!
The old woman with the Luger darted one gnarly claw fist at her face. Shrieking, Alex wrenched her right foot free and kicked, feeling the solid thump all the way to her knee and the moment the woman's beaky nose crumpled. Flailing, the old woman staggered back as a great spume of blood gushed down her face. Alex kicked again, but more hands caught her, and then she felt her head being pulled back and the skin of her neck exposed, and she thought, oh God, they're going to cut! Instead of a knife, she felt the rough bite of rope. Her scream choked off, and then they were dragging her by the neck over the cold, hard earth. This was like the nightmare at the gas station all over again, but there were so many of them, and she had no chance. Still, she fought, twisting, digging in with her heels. She clawed at the rope, felt her fingernails tear as she scrabbled for a handhold, but then they were hoisting her up, hands catching at her to keep her from falling, and her air choked off as the rope tightened. The woman whose nose she'd broken, Luger Lady, was back. Her mouth hung wide open in a bloody, ravenous snarl, and this time she clutched a knife.
Gonna cut your little head off!
Luger Lady shrilled. She exhaled a cloud that reeked of iron and rage.
Gonna cut your little—
The sudden crackle of gunfire was crisp and sharp and glassy. Then a voice, very clear, cut through the din and the thundering roar of blood in her ears.
Go, Jet! Go!
Someone screamed as a German shepherd bulleted out of the crowd. The shepherd was black as coal and very large, and as Luger Lady half turned, the dog sprang. Luger Lady had time to get her hands up, but then the dog barreled into the old woman. She tumbled to the ground, her knife flashing away, and then the old woman was shrieking,
"Get it off me! Get it off me!"
"Jesus Christ!" someone said. "Don't shoot it!" a man shouted. "It's one of theirs! Don't shoot it!"
Around her neck, the bite of the rope suddenly eased, and then Alex was on her knees. Her chest was on fire, and her throat felt as if someone had taken a razor blade to it and slashed. Gasping, she hung on all fours, trying not to be sick. Luger Lady was still screaming, but no one moved to help her, and incredibly, no one tried to shoot the dog. Alex couldn't really see what was happening, but she heard the voice again, closer now. "Jet! Off, boy! Off!" And she had a single stunned thought. That voice! He's not old! The shepherd instantly obeyed, dancing away from the old woman, but it did not leave. Instead, the dog turned toward Alex, its black lips curling back, and Alex waited helpless for the jaws to snap at her flesh, tear her skin. Instead, the dog nosed her, a single playful nudge. The scent that came from the animal was like a splash of cool water on a hot day. She thought of the morning Mina had broken out of the underbrush to save them from the wild dogs, the intense relief that had melted the icy sludge of fear in her veins. She remembered how, all of a sudden, Mina had been reluctant to leave her to follow after Ellie. She thought of the wolf. No threat. All around, dogs brassled and snarled, but not at her. They were growling at their owners. The voices in the crowd fell instantly, deathly silent, and people let go of the dogs. Surging forward, the animals ranged around Alex in a tight, protective circle. Some licked her face, others nosed at her as she dragged the rope from her neck. The big black shepherd pressed against her as if daring someone to cross it, and then something very small spurted from the crowd and into her lap. It was the puppy, wriggling all over, so frantic with relief that it tried to climb on top of her head. "Good boy," Alex said, still stupid with amazement, and then looked up as the crowd wavered and broke. She saw old men with rifles and shotguns parting the crowd like Moses at the Red Sea, wading into the dogs. Looking up, Jet let out a soft whine, his black tail whisking the air in greeting. Following the dog's gaze, Alex pulled in a sudden, startled gasp. "Are you all right?" He knelt on one knee and reached a hand to steady her. His eyes were as jet black as his dog, his cheekbones were high and sharp as axe heads, and his scent was a complex mix of the darkness itself, cold mist and black shadows. With a little yelp, the puppy jumped to lick at his hand, and the boy smiled. "Hey, you?" he said, ruffling the dog's ears. "That's a good pup." Chapter 42. The dark-eyed boy's name was Chris Prentice, but his friend, Peter, was in charge of men who were, with few exceptions, old enough to be grandparents. "I don't care about the damn dogs. We don't know that it's not a trap." Peter didn't look much older than Tom, and had a tumble of wheat-brown hair that fell to his muscular shoulders. "She could be luring us, man." "I'm not," she said. They'd marched her back, under guard, behind the semi, and she now sat cross-legged in a wagon. They'd taken her pack, and one of them might have her Glock, but she wasn't sure. The puppy curled in her lap, its ears lifting anxiously as Chris and Peter argued. When they'd nudged her into the wagon, the shepherd had sprung up after to lie quietly by her side, as Mina had done. "Aren't the dogs supposed to know?" Peter's face flashed with annoyance. "Could be early yet. You still might change. Anyway, the dogs won't know if you're telling the truth about this other guy. We go out there, you've got an ambush set up, and there go a wagon, horses, weapons." "I think the risk is worth it," Chris said. He was the quiet one, the observer, and Alex thought he was about her age, maybe a year older. "We need someone like him. He's a soldier. He knows bombs. You're always saying, 'I know what I'm always saying.'" Fuming, Peter planted his hands on his hips. "Okay, but we wait until morning." "That's too long," she said. Peter fired a warning glance. "I don't think I'm asking you, but if you want to march on out of here, fine by me." "Peter," said Chris in his calm, patient way, "you know we can't let her leave." Alex wasn't sure she liked the sound of that. On the other hand, she wasn't particularly anxious to face that mob again. "Look," she said to Peter, "I've been out there all day. We're not talking zombie hordes.
I'm sorry, but you don't know what you're talking about, said Chris. His tone didn't change, but she heard the rebuke. You're lucky to be alive. Three attacked you, and you said one had a club. That's new. Even though they didn't coordinate their attack, they've never really hunted together before either. Chris looked at Peter. Could be a first step toward them getting organized. All the more reason to get Tom now, she said. If he isn't dead yet, Peter said. You keep saying that he will be. Is that what you want? Peter scowled. Of course not. I'm not an asshole. I'm just saying that you're really lucky. If you'd been caught farther out from town when it got dark, you might not be sitting here. In case they hadn't noticed, a bunch of old people had nearly lynched her, so she hadn't exactly been safe close to town either. Is that why you've got the roadblocks? To keep out those brain-zapped kids? Brain-zapped, Peter barked a humorless laugh. I like that. We call them the changed. But yeah, that perimeter's one of the reasons they're not walking down Main Street. But a perimeter couldn't be the only reason, Alex figured. Short of building a fence, how did you secure an entire village? What sucks, Peter continued, is that they've figured out how to survive. They know how to get warm, they know how to find shelter, they follow people. From what you said, it sounds like they're learning how to really hunt. So maybe they'll kill each other, Alex said. Peter shook his head. They don't, which completely blows. Right now, they're not organized enough to overrun the town. They might get there, though, and then we're screwed. There are way more of them than we got bullets for. She wasn't giving up on Tom. You have all these people. You've got guns. With the horses, you could get to Tom in a couple of hours. If one of you were hurt, you'd go after him, wouldn't you? I'm not doing hypotheticals, said Peter. Look, I understand. You care about this guy. I get that. He sounds like he was a pretty good guy. He is, she said, her eyes filling. He is. Peter, Chris said quietly, I say we go after him. It's not like there are a lot of us. If we don't fight for each other, who will? If he's spared, then it's worth the risk. Alex heard the emphasis, spared, like changed. These people didn't see Tom or her or even themselves as survivors. They were spared, like people who'd escaped some sort of wrath of God thing. Damn it, said Peter. He scuffed snow with the heel of his boot, and Alex smelled the peppery edge of his resistance ease. All right, but you stay behind, Chris. Alex didn't like the sound of that, either. Not because Chris was such an ally, but because Peter already didn't like her. So if there was a little accident... Chris apparently felt the same way. I don't think that's a good idea. Yeah, that's just it. You're not thinking, Peter snapped. But I am, and I do not want to explain to the Rev or the Council why the hell you're dead and I'm not. A splinter of ice stabbed the dark mist of Chris's scent. No hint of anger crossed his face. There was nothing to betray him except his scent. Chris may have been only a little older than Alex, but he was very calm, a lot like Tom in some ways, and Alex thought she understood why Chris's scent was so... what was the word? Dark. Not evil, but shadowy, as if Chris knew how to hide. Maybe he'd dealt with people about to go nuclear his whole life. My grandfather is not here, Chris said evenly. The Council of Five is not here. It's just us, Peter, and the deal is we watch each other's back. So I'm coming. The two stared at each other a long moment, and then Peter gave a curt nod. Fine. If we're lucky, we can be there a couple of hours before dawn. Now excuse me while I go sell the others on this crazy scheme. After he'd stomped off, she said to Chris, Thank you. You're welcome, he said, but he did not smile, and his scent thickened, folding him in darkness again. But I didn't do it for you. And if Peter told you to put a bullet in my head? I don't think you want to go there, he said. Chapter 43 They were eight altogether. Two men on horseback flanked either side of the wagon. Peter rode point, and another man brought up the rear. Chris handled the wagon, and Alex sat between him and Jet. The puppy curled in a knot in her lap. "Nice pup," Chris said.
"What?"
Everything was so loud. The creak of the wagon, the jangle of traces, the heavy clop of horses' hooves. After days of skulking around, hiding in the woods, and nearly jumping out of her skin every time a branch cracked, she was a little freaked out by the noise.
"Your pup. Don't see too many Wymies around here."
"Wymies?"
"Weimaraners. He's going to be one big dog when he grows up. If I'm not wrong, he's going to be a ghost, too."
At her confused look, one corner of his mouth lifted in a half-grin.
"You don't know much about dogs, do you? Other than that they suddenly like me?"
"Never had one."
"It's the color of his coat. They call those kind of Wymies gray ghosts."
"He got a name?"
"I haven't had time."
She looked down at the dog.
"I like Ghost."
"Good a name as any. You'll have to let our vet give him the once-over before we can let you keep him, though."
"You've got a vet?"
"Yeah, and we could use a couple more. We've got a lot of livestock, and, of course, all the dogs. We get a lot of people headed this way, so a vet'll eventually come through." She remembered the argument about Tom. "We need him."
"That what you were doing back at the roadblock? Weeding people out?"
"Uh-huh."
"You don't sound sorry about it."
Even in that queer moonlight, Chris's eyes and hair were as dark as his scent.
"It's necessary."
"How can you turn people away?"
"We do what we have to. We don't have unlimited supplies. Whether you get to stay depends on what you bring to the table."
"That's pretty harsh."
"Yes, it is. But there's only so much food to go around, and we have to balance who we bring in with what we need. Right now, we need people for labor, tending to the animals and general upkeep. We need guys to man the perimeter. Come spring, there will be fields to till and plant, so we might let in more, if people are still coming, that is."
"Who decides? Peter?"
"No, the Council of Five."
"Like," she frowned, "a town council?"
He shook his head.
"More like, you know, elders."
She almost laughed.
"Nearly everybody's an elder."
"Except for us, yeah. But these guys have family ties that go way, way back. The Reverend's family, the Jaegers, pretty much started rule from the ground up, and a Jaeger's always been the head of the council. As I understand it, the Council of Five has been in charge of rule for a long time." Something dinged.
"Peter said the Reverend is your grandfather, but your last name is Prentice."
"That's right. Growing up, I never saw my grandfather."
"So you didn't live here before?"
She sensed a sudden wariness, a reserve that reeked of secrets and shame, and his scent got even darker.
"No, I'm from Merton, about 60 miles southeast. You?"
"Evanston, Illinois. A couple blocks from Northwestern."
A flicker of something like amusement.
"I'd just applied to Northwestern. Wasn't my first choice."
Okay, so he was a senior, either 17 or more likely 18.
"What was?"
"Doesn't really matter now, does it?"
Ouch. She felt the barrier slam down and decided there was no answer to that. Instead, she watched a knot of clouds scud over the face of that alien moon. Snuffling, the puppy burrowed deeper into her lap. Chris said,
"Sorry. It's just that I don't like looking back. No point. It's all dead anyway."
"How do you know that?"
"We scrounged up an old radio, the kind that still works."
Her pulse skipped. Harlan and Brett had taken the Ranger radio when they'd stolen the truck.
"Where did you find it?"
Maybe he heard something in her tone, because he flicked a curious glance.
"Farm, about 10 miles out of town."
"Oh."
She worked at keeping the disappointment out of her voice.
"Have you heard a lot of broadcasts?"
"Not tons, and even less as time's gone on. Enough to know it's a mess out there."
He paused. "Where were you when it happened?" She gave him the bare minimum, the mountain, Jack, Ellie.
He didn't ask why she was in the Walkermore, or about her parents, and she saw no reason to volunteer the information.
"What about you?" she asked.
"School. I was outside helping the chemistry teacher set off a smoke bomb for the sophomores. She just dropped. I thought at first she'd fainted, but she was gone."
"What did you do?"
"Before or after the plane crashed in the football field?"
"After."
"I nearly beat a kid to death with a textbook. It was either that or he was going to take my face off. There was this other girl in the group. She was still okay, not changed, only she freaked out and took off for the playground where there were all these kids. Most of them hadn't changed. Some had, though, and they were going after the others. Oh, my God." She didn't even want to imagine that. Then these 5 football jocks spotted her. Plowed right into that playground and tore that girl apart, and after that they started in on the little ones. He paused again. "I still see it sometimes when I close my eyes. Hear it. The whole freaking mess."
"What did you do?"
"Not what I thought I would," he said. "I ran." They rode in silence for a while, and then she asked,
"How did you end up in Rule? Because of your grandfather?"
He shook his head. "My car wouldn't start. Home was 25 miles away, and Merton's a big town. After what I saw at the school, I figured it would be 500 times worse there. All those people dead, or getting killed, or going crazy. No point."
"But it was still home."
"There was just me and my dad."
The shadows in Chris's scent thickened, and Alex thought that his father was someone Chris didn't like thinking about.
"Now that we understand more, how old the people who dropped were, I know there wouldn't have been any point. He was 50.
"But you couldn't have known that then, and there have to be exceptions. Look at us.
We only prove the rule. As near as we can tell, the majority of normal people walking around are either really young or pushing 65 or 70 on up."
"Oh."
She cast about for something to say.
"Well, your father would want you to save yourself. He wouldn't want you dead."
The corner of his mouth lifted again. "You didn't know my dad." She didn't know what to say to that, either.
"How many of us are there?"
"In Rule? Well, we got about 500 people total. Out of those, 63 are spared."
63 kids out of 500 people?"
"That's right. Only 25 kids are our age. 12 guys, 13 girls." He measured her with a look. 14 now."
"Only 25?
"Uh-huh. Peter's the oldest spared. He's 24.
He hesitated.
"He's actually a pretty good guy once you get to know him." She'd reserve judgment on that.
"How does anyone know we won't change? Maybe it's just a matter of time, like Peter said."
She thought about Deidre.
"Have any of the younger kids changed since the zap?"
"Never quite gotten that far."
She didn't understand. "What do you mean?"
"I mean, we don't let things get that far." In the moonlight, his face was nothing more than a glimmer. "Why do you think we have the dogs?" An early warning system, she realized, like canaries in a mine. The dogs must sense the change before it happened. Still, she couldn't believe it.
"You decide about a kid on the basis of what a dog thinks?"
"They haven't been wrong yet." Meaning these people had experience. My God, had they locked the kids up and watched them change? Like an experiment, just to make sure? They must have, or else they wouldn't have such faith in the dogs. A wave of unreality washed over her, leaving her shaky and ill.
The dogs finger kids, and then these people. What do they do? Kick the kids out of town? Kill them?
She thought back to those 3 kids, the girl with her club, and those 2 boys. Until that moment, she hadn't dwelled on them much. She'd been too busy trying to keep Tom alive, and then fending off a mob, and there was really no point, to borrow a phrase. What she'd done had been self-defense. She'd had no choice. "We do what we have to do in order to survive," Chris said quietly. "When you've been here a while, you'll understand." The hell of it was, in a way, she already did.
Chapter 44. The bodies of the three kids still lay where they'd fallen, where she'd killed them, in the parking lot of the convenience store, which begged another interesting question. Why weren't the changed lunch for run-of-the-mill scavengers? Scavengers had clearly visited. Ned was still dead, but headless now, and something else had wandered away with Ned's left hand. But the changed hadn't been touched, and someone else had been there. The back door of the convenience store had been forced from the outside. In the office, there was only a pile of car mats and the reek of bourbon and infection, and nothing more. Tom was gone. Part 4. Rule. Chapter 45. The pop of distant gunfire jolted Alex from yet another fitful night's sleep. She registered the slash of morning sun in an already too bright and very cold room, the soft bed, and the comforting, oh-so-normal aromas of sausage and eggs and fried potatoes and, yes, coffee. Yet what she felt was not hunger or gratitude, but a horrible sinking sensation, like when you go to sleep hoping the world will change, only to wake up and find that it hasn't. Yes, she was safe and warm and fed and clean for the first time since leaving the ranger station, but Tom was gone, and she had failed. More shots, not many. After 3 days, almost Thanksgiving now, she was getting used to the gunfire, which was sometimes more, sometimes less. She pulled the pillow over her head to blot out the noise and light. She had nothing to be thankful for. She had failed. Tom would never have failed her. She should never have left him. God, this was so unfair. First her parents, then the monster, and her life and school and friends, then Aunt Hannah, then Ellie and Mina, and now Tom. She had to get out of here. She had to find Tom, and then Ellie, too. Gather supplies. She could get a pack, a map, a gun. But then what? There was a quick rap on the door, more a formality than anything else. The knob turned, and Jess poked her head into the room. "I thought I heard you moving around," she said. "Time for you to come downstairs. Matt's here to take you to meet the Reverend."
"Why?"
3 days, and her body still felt like one big bruise. Her back ached, her throat was raw, and her hands were a quilt of healing cuts and scrapes.
"It's not like it changes anything."
"Now, none of that self-pity, girl."
Jess had the look of a spinster librarian, dry and efficient, with steel-gray hair pinned in a bun. All she needed was a pencil behind one ear and cat's-eye glasses on a keep-chain.
"Corinthians says, God is faithful, and with the temptation he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah. It means stop feeling sorry for yourself. God is testing you."
"How do you figure that?"
Alex said, feeling very sorry for herself.
"How do you think?" Jess counted off on her fingers. "Let me see. You survive the attack. You don't change. You rescue a child. You nearly get eaten by wild dogs. You nearly get eaten by the changed. And you're almost lynched. Oh, and the dogs like you. Did I miss something?"
"Yeah, I failed the one person who would have died rather than hurt me."
"I don't see how those are tests. They just happened."
"Then you are very blind, and it's high time you woke up. You're not the only one with problems. Every single person here in Rule has lost someone they cared about, and some of us more than one. I watched my girls drop dead in front of my eyes, but I thank God my grandson was spared. Our lives are a ruin, but you don't see us all dragging around with long faces, feeling sorry for ourselves. Everyone works, and that includes you, young lady. Now get your little butt out of bed before I drag it out."
"You're not my mother,"
Alex said, and then thought, oh boy, did that sound like Ellie or what?
"And thank our Lord for that," Jess retorted. "I am not a bully, Alex, but neither you nor I nor anyone else here has time for a pity party.
There's a puppy downstairs going crazy because he wants to see you, and there is work to be done.
I don't have to listen to you.
Under my roof, you do. When Alex didn't reply, Jess lowered herself to the bed with a sigh. Look, I don't enjoy this. I'd much rather we'd just get along. Alex thought that was probably true, but Jess was hard to read. As straightforward as she appeared to be, her scent was, well, what Alex imagined white smelled like. Not mist, nothing shadowy like Chris. Jess's scent was a blank.
You can start by leaving me alone,
Alex said. I can't do that. I know this sounds trite, but if Tom meant this much to you, then he wouldn't want to see you like this. He sounds like he was a very fine, very brave young man, and he saw something in you worth saving, not once, but several times over. You can try telling yourself that it was a reflex, that he would have done it for anyone, that he didn't have a choice, but remember one thing. In the end, dear, he chose you over his friend. He chose you. Jess brushed a hank of hair from Alex's forehead. Scripture says, by faith he still speaks, even though he is dead.
What does that mean?
She asked miserably. It means you must honor Tom's sacrifice. You must honor him. He would want you to live.
Living feels like a punishment.
Tears streamed down her cheeks.
Everyone I care about is gone.
As long as you're alive, there is hope, Jess said. Hope is saying that I will live one more day, and that is a blessing, too.
Where's that from?
The Book of Jess, she said. Now get up. Don't make Tom's suffering all for nothing. In the kitchen, Jess was puttering over a skillet as Alex's housemates, a plump, cheery 16-year-old named Tori, and Lena, an arrogant-looking brunette Alex's age, washed and dried. A much older man, weather-beaten and craggy as a cowboy, slouched at a white, farm-style kitchen table. Chewing, he looked up from a mug of coffee and half-eaten muffin, then swallowed and said, "Well, good morning, sunshine. How'd you sleep?"
"Fine, thank you, Doc,"
Alex said. Kincaid had told her the very first day that it was either Matt or Doc, and Alex just couldn't wrap her head around being on a first-name basis with a guy pushing 75. After her icy room, the kitchen, warmed by an old-fashioned cast-iron stove and filled with the intoxicating aromas of cinnamon, nutmeg, and apples, was a relief. Alex's mouth watered and her stomach growled. The kitchen's side door opened and Ghost crowded in. Spying Alex, the puppy let out a happy yawp, scampered over, and in general made a fuss. Grinning, Alex bent to give the squirming puppy a tummy rub.
"How you doing, big boy?" "More like fat boy," said a third girl who'd come in with the dog.
Sarah was tiny, with very dark eyes and bones as delicate as a porcelain doll. Dragging off a rose-pink knit cap, she shook out a tumble of blonde ringlets.
"He practically rolls down the steps."
Lena said to Alex, "Yeah, now that you're done sulking, you can go out in the cold for a change."
"I don't mind walking him."
Kneeling, Sarah scratched Ghost's stomach, then giggled as the puppy dissolved into helpless squiggles. Her face turned wistful.
"My brother had a dog, this really cute little cocker spaniel, only he got hit by a car."
"Well, since there are no cars, you won't have to worry about that anymore," Lena said.
"I'd love your help, Sarah,"
Alex said, ignoring Lena's eye roll.
"Alex, I made up a plate for you."
Tori turned from the sink, wiping her hands on a dish towel. Her cheeks were dotted with color, and her hair had frizzed from the steam. "Why don't you sit down, and I'll..." "You know, she's not a cripple." Lena dropped a dried plate onto a stack with a clatter. "Stop being such a suck-up." Alex pushed to her feet.
"It's okay, Tori. I can get it."
Tori's eyebrows crinkled, and her mouth formed a tiny, hurt O.
"I'm not sucking up,"
she said to Lena. Lena snorted. "Yeah, right. Just because Chris keeps hanging around doesn't mean that Peter..." "Lena," Jess warned.
"What? I'm just saying. I don't get why you're all treating her like she's any different from us."
"Well,"
Sarah began timidly,
"I did hear that the dogs..."
The dogs. Lena did another wildly exaggerated eye roll.
They don't know everything. What if the animals change? Has anyone thought about that? It's not like the animals didn't go apeshit that first day.
Thank you for that stunningly precise scientific observation, Lena, Jess said, expertly flipping an egg. When you get your degree in veterinary medicine, I'll be sure to ask your opinion. Now, the last time I looked, those dishes weren't drying themselves.
Lena gave a mug a half-hearted swipe.
When does she start? You would never let us get away with this shit.
Oh, my ears, said Kincaid.
Lena Christina Stoltz!
Jess hacked off two thick slices of brown bread. I will not tolerate abusiveness in my house. One more trashy word out of that sewer mouth, and I will speak to the Reverend.
You're bluffing, Lena threw her towel aside. You won't do it, and the council won't turn me out, because you need us. We're just so spared. We're so valuable.
Lena, they just want to protect us, said Tori.
Protect us? We're prisoners. They won't let us leave.
But it's for our own good.
Just because the adults say that doesn't make it true. Lena glared at Jess. You can keep me here a million years, but you'll never make me agree with you.
I don't care if you agree, Jess said, calmly pouring coffee into a silver thermos.
But let's be clear. When you are chosen, I'll kill myself first. When you are chosen, you may do what you wish under your own roof. But so long as you remain here, you will follow the rules, or I will ask the Reverend to reconsider. I don't think you want to test me on that.
Jess capped the thermos.
Is that understood?
The kitchen had gone very quiet. Even Ghost was still. Tori looked on the verge of tears, and Sarah was milky white. Alex's eyes kept sliding from Lena's pale face to the floor, but her mind whirled.
Chosen? What's that? And Lena tried to leave, but they wouldn't let her? Wait just a minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Lena's voice was small, but Alex could smell the hot, peppery sting of her fury.
Excellent. Jess tucked the thermos under one arm and picked up the wrapped sandwich. Now, if you'll excuse me, that poor guard's waited long enough in the cold for his breakfast.
The door closed behind her with a decisive snick. No one moved for